Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our public hearing tonight. This is the time and place scheduled for, it might be part six or part seven of our public hearing regarding the conditional use application number 2022-06, as filed by Lumo Governor Crossing, regarding the master plan development for redevelopment of land and which is generally located on the corner of Governor Road and Fishburne Road. So we're going to call the meeting to order, which I've now done. This is the time and place advertised for this hearing. We expect the hearing to last until 9 o'clock. At this time, I'd ask Mr. Christman to conduct a roll call.
Certainly, Supervisor Zabuda.
Here.
Supervisor Ferrato.
Here.
Supervisor Nutt.
Here.
Supervisor Wyckoff.
Here.
And Supervisor Abruzzo.
Here.
There are five present, Mr. Chairman.
All right, so we've conducted the roll call. First, on the normal housekeeping, it's posted within the meeting room, but I want to advise all persons attending this meeting that it is and has been the policy of the township to tape record all public meetings for the purpose of providing accurate minutes. Therefore, whenever anyone gets up to speak, it's very important that you state your name, first name, last name. If you're here for public comment at the end of the meeting, you have to give us your address, too. If you're here because you're one of the parties or you're representing the party, you merely need to identify yourself, first name, last name, and which party you're representing. And there's at least two other things I want to address before we start. First, if there are people here this evening that are under the impression that there's a Hope Drive extension as part of this project that is driving through the daycare, and you're hoping to hear about that tonight, I will tell you that that is not part of the application. It's been discussed multiple times. People have raised the issue. Council for Governor Crossing Project has made it clear. It's clear in the plans. It may have been initially contemplated in a prior sketch plan, but it is not part of the formal plan submitted, and therefore it is not under consideration. So I say that because I wouldn't want somebody to sit here for 3 hours waiting to hear about this, thinking that that's what's being contemplated here by this plan. That is not being contemplated. There's no Hope Drive extension as part of this project. And the only time it was considered, as far as I can tell, was a couple of years ago. So if you're here, everyone is welcome to be here. I just don't want people to stay here unnecessarily. I want to give them back their night. If you want to spend your night somewhere else, you're welcome to spend the night with us. But I do think we need to be very clear. And I don't know how that got started. After six or seven of these meetings, it's upsetting. It is upsetting to me that there would be misinformation like that floating around the community because it unnecessarily scares people and it unnecessarily frightens people. And that's not the way we've been conducting business here on this board on any of the matters that come before the board, nor on this particular matter. So I say that because I don't want people to be disappointed. That being said, anybody that wants to place comment on the public record, when we get there, it will probably be, scheduled for, it's going to be at the end of the meeting, so it's probably going to be likely closer to 9 before that microphone is turned over to anyone that wishes to add public comment. Mr. Nelson, do you have anything to add to this?
Well, just to clarify the public comment, we will not be taking any public comment tonight. This is a hearing, it's not a public meeting. And as a hearing, it goes, there's a different sort of process. So the public comment on the hearing won't be taken until the hearing itself is completed. All the parties have had a chance to introduce their own evidence, introduce their witnesses. So based on how quickly things have been going or not, I do not see that ending tonight. So we will not be accepting any public comment tonight. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to kind of point this out at the beginning, that if you wanted to make a comment, on this hearing or on Hope Drive, you're probably not going to have that opportunity tonight. You're more than welcome to stay, but we don't want you to be sitting here thinking, oh, I just need to wait this out and then I'll have my chance. More likely than not, you're not going to have a chance to speak on this.
We don't have a public comment at the conclusion
of the hearing.
Entirely not tonight.
Because
on the agenda, so it looks like we were going to have it, but we haven't had it during any of the prior sessions, so we'll be clear on that. The other thing is, we do have now all updated audio and video in this room, so I think it will be easier for folks to hear us, which is that's good news for us. I think when folks are speaking from the microphone, I think it's going to be easier for everyone in the room. Televisions have been installed on either side to make it easier for everybody to see. Whatever's put up on that screen will be on those televisions to make it easier for folks to see. Other than that, I will then, Mr. Russell, I'm going to turn it over to you and we'll get going.
All right. Excellent. We do not have any administrative matters at this point in time. I believe we were in the middle of the township's direct of its witness, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Nelson.
So I will hand it over to you, Mr. McNair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, Mr. Stump. You recall at the last hearing, we were discussing some potential impacts of the project to property owners along Fishburne Road.
Okay, that's fine.
And Eric, please adjust the table and the seat in whatever way is comfortable. That goes for everybody that's going to question witnesses. You are free to adjust the podium and that table the way that's helpful to you. Okay, so I tried to move it around a little bit before the meeting, but the idea is to be comfortable up there when you're questioning the witness.
So I'll re-ask that question. Do you recall at the last hearing when we were wrapping things up or getting towards the end of the night that you were giving some testimony concerning the potential impacts of the project on property owners along the Fishburne Road area?
Correct.
And in fact, you had prepared an exhibit, I think it's T4 in my packet, related to the potential impacts along the roadway based on modifications of the road, the new intersection, and other aspects of the project. Is that correct?
That's correct. We essentially annotated the concept plan that was previously provided, added some property owner names to that exhibit, as well as what we anticipated the impacts would be through the PennDOT permitting process.
Okay. Do you specifically remember me asking some questions related to impacts based on turning restrictions, or impacts including turning restrictions, the potential need to acquire additional right-of-way, and specific approvals that would be needed from property owners based on the project?
Yes, those are really the three categories, either property owner approval of the project, or permitting a driveway, whether it be because it's being modified or turn maneuvers being restricted, or needing right-of-way from a property owner. There's kind of the three classifications of property owner impacts.
Okay. So I'm going to refer your attention to the next exhibit, which is exhibit T5, contained in the packet that I had submitted. Have you had an opportunity to take a look at T5?
Yes.
And can you explain to the board what T5 is?
It is essentially an overview of what I just described, you know, the categories of impacts to property owners, what approvals need to be obtained in each of those cases, and then give an overview of the process if you're unable to obtain those approvals.
Is this a manual or document that is received from PennDOT, or it's actually a PennDOT publication, is that correct?
Correct. PennDOT publication 282, which is the Highway Occupancy Permit Operations Manual.
All right. And so let me refer your attention to page, what's labeled as page 60 of that. It's the maybe the eighth page of Exhibit T5.
And so the first several pages of that exhibit are text, not a word. Those words are generally summarized then in the flowchart, the one you have up here, as well as the one on the following page.
Okay. So this flowchart indicates flowchart for approval procedures, and then it says impacts to access of neighboring owners. Would you be able to walk us through the flowchart? And I guess first I should ask you, is this the process that you and or an applicant go through when you're trying to assess or determine what impacts there are on neighboring owners to a project?
Correct. The applicant, or in this case the developer, would go through this process in order to obtain the approvals to secure their HOP to build the improvements that are recommended in the traffic study.
All right. Then can you walk us through that flowchart?
Yeah, so start at the top. First question is, you know, is the property impacted by proposed improvements? Of course, if it's not impacted, then no approval is necessary. It does define what it, you know, earlier on, what it considers to be impacted. But again, generally, it's if you're widening onto their property, if you're putting a turn lane in front of their property, if you're putting a median in front of their property, some other measure that may impact their access, they consider that an impact even if you're not physically on their property.
All right. And in this particular case, there are several different types of impacts that you noted on Exhibit T4. Is that correct?
Yeah. The T4 is kind of a summary of what we found going through this flowchart for each property.
All right. If you could continue.
And then if it is impacted, then the next question is, does it have an existing driveway? If there is no existing driveway, then you need to obtain their approval of the plan, something that says they acknowledge the plan and are aware of what's being planned along their frontage. The thought being there, it could impact their ability to get a driveway in the future, even if they don't have one yet. If there is an existing driveway, then the next question is if the existing driveway needs to be reconstructed or restricted in some manner. And the question answer to either of those is yes. Then again, you need to get an HOP application for that driveway. If it doesn't, then it goes back to just needing their approval because you're not affecting their existing driveway. So again, that's just kind of the process to identify what approvals you need from which property owner.
All right. Could you go back then to Exhibit T4, and if we could just take one example of a property, and maybe it's easiest just to take the first property that's located closest to the intersection of Governor Road and Fishburne Road. So utilizing that property, can you walk us through the flow chart there?
Yes, the first question, you know, is it impacted? And in this case, you can see where the left turn lane currently ends right there, the existing stripe, that light gray line is the end of the existing turn lane. And that turn lane is now proposed to be extended longer. That's going to extend further across that property owner's frontage. They consider that to be that the property is impacted because the turn lane is installed along their frontage. Then the next question is there an existing driveway? There is. Does that driveway need to be reconstructed or restricted? They do not plan to reconstruct that driveway. They're tying in the widening prior to it. It's unclear at this point from PennDOT whether they will require a restriction of that driveway or not.
What type of restriction might be required for that?
Would be potentially a left turn restriction for left turns in or out of the driveway due to the turn lane in front of the driveway. I say it's unclear because that driveway already has a left turn lane in front of it. They may kind of grandfather that in since it's in existing condition, not a new turn lane, not at the location of that driveway. They are extending the lane, but they're not. The condition in front of the driveway is remaining as it is today. So what I have labeled up here is, at a minimum, they need to get that property owner to approve the left turn lane. because it is being extended along their frontage, possible left turn restrictions, and then possible right of way. It was unclear, certainly when we did the other day's exhibits, exactly where this the widening was going to tie in and how far the grading was going to extend compared to where the right of way line was. I think they're still working through that through the HOP process, determining exactly where the limits of their grading is going to be. But what was placed in blue, or we annotated on this plan in blue, was basically following down that flowchart, for each property.
All right, and then referring your attention back to that flowchart page, below the chart itself, there's a rectangular box that talks about if unsuccessful at obtaining an approval letter, signature on HOP plan or application, continue to the next page. So there, you'll agree there's a flowchart on the next page or the last page of exhibit T5.
Yep.
And can you explain how this differs from the prior flowchart?
Yeah, so this is essentially working through, now we've already established what approvals we need. Now what happens if we're not able to get it? Obviously, if you're able to get the approval, then that's the end of the procedure. You submit that to PennDOT and you move on.
And when you say that, that's if the property owner were to say to you, yes, I'm agreeable to that restriction or that whatever is being sought by an applicant.
Need right away or agreeable to sign a driveway application or whatever approval we determine in that previous step. If they're agreeable to do that, to sign the documents, the applicant would then submit that to PennDOT.
All right, so this last flowchart is really for purposes of if there is no agreement by the property owner.
Correct. If the property owner is not willing to agree to the impact of their property, the next step is to look at engineering alternatives. Is there a way to either lessen the impact of that property owner or remove it altogether? For instance, if you're adding a left turn lane, typically those are widened symmetrically around the road. You're adding half to one side of the road, half to the other side. That's PennDOT's preference. If a property owner is unwilling to give right away, they may allow you to shift it entirely to the other side of the road and widen 11 feet on one side and not at all on the other side of the road. One example of how you may be able to redesign, still meet the intent of the project, but avoid or reduce the impacts to a property owner. There could be a variety of different ways of achieving that same similar reduction of impact.
Okay.
So then, once you do that, you determine if any of those alternatives are viable, and do they eliminate the impact altogether? Which is this first box, or the next one down is you reduce it, and then go back to the property owner and with the reduced impacts and see if they're agreeable to that.
All right, and if they are not, what happens with this flowchart?
And if you're not successful in having them agree to something less, or you're not able to find an alternative that would be still safe for the road user, acceptable to PennDOT, and mitigate, then PennDOT would weigh in on whether or not the interference with the access is reasonable or not. And say at that point, the developer should get some sort of formal assessment or appraisal of the impact. Often that's done earlier on in the process, but this is the point where PennDOT requires it to be done to put a value on what the impact is to that property.
Okay. So, well, let's take an example. If you're talking about specifically the right of way. If more right of way is needed, is that something that would be applicable in this particular situation?
Yeah, so this situation is applicable to the two approvals that are listed above, which is obtaining the property owner approval, their signature on an HOP plan, or obtaining an HOP permit.
All right, so then this more relates to a restriction.
Correct, a restriction or term land in front of somebody's property.
All right, so with the restriction example, let's say we're down at this level of the flow chart, there, the box that says conduct loss assessment or appraisal. Could you explain how that would play out with somebody who is considering a restriction, that there's some value to that restriction potentially to the property owner?
Yeah, so you get your appraisal done, and I'm just picking a number to say, you know, the impact that property owner is deemed at $5,000. And that requires, you know, that offer to be made to the property owner, you know, for that loss of value to the property, and engage and document any responses or lack of responses that you get from the property owner. And obviously, if at that point, you know, maybe that was different than the number that was being offered earlier, or you know, who knows why, property owner may change their mind at that point. But if they're successful at that point, then again, you're back to the end of the procedure. If not, then again, PennDOT verifies that the offer was reasonable, the property owner rejected it, and the interference with their access is not unreasonable, then they may still issue the permit for the work to be done, even though the driveway may not be officially permitted, or the property owner may not have signed off on the turn lane or median in front of their property.
What does PennDOT have to do in that situation? Do they have to indemnify?
They require that the applicant indemnify PennDOT. So if the applicant comes back and sues PennDOT that they have had this impact, and you know, or for whatever reason, if there's an accident there at some point in the future that they claim was attributable to these improvements, and they look to sue PennDOT, that indemnification actually means that the applicant would be liable for anything that comes out of that lawsuit. And again, I want to reiterate, this is only for the cases of an HOP application that's needed or a sign-off. If there is right-of-way that's needed, PennDOT can't issue a permit if an authorized work on somebody else's property. So in the case of right-of-way, if you go back to page 59 of this exhibit, the highlighted section there, the first section essentially says an application may be denied if the permit requires entry on the land of another that has or will not be acquired by condemnation or otherwise. So if there's right of way that's needed, whether that be a temporary easement for grading or something permanent, and they're unable to obtain that, that is grounds for PennDOT to deny an HOP application. Again, if you look at alternatives and can't find any other way around the need for the right-of-way, and they're not agreeable to eliminate the improvement.
Okay. So there's the potential that, you know, the township would engage in eminent domain, but property owners don't have to specifically agree to receiving just compensation and giving up a portion of the property. Is that what you're saying?
A municipality may elect to utilize eminent domain if in the cases where that occurs, an existing condition that there's a non-existent problem that is solving, not just facilitating that development. That is an option to obtain right of way if the property owner is not agreeable.
But unlike the restriction procedure that you outlined in the flow charts, if ultimately there can't be an agreement reached regarding eminent domain, what happens? Or, you know, what are the potentials that happen in that scenario where a property owner just won't agree to provide a portion of their property?
So if the property owner doesn't agree and the township's not willing to utilize eminent domain, and again, I think you're looking at design alternatives or... Now, the case here, some of the right of way is needed by adding the widening the driveway for the right and right out driveway. Maybe that driveway gets eliminated altogether and avoids the need for that property owner approval. That may be one workaround if you don't have. eminent domain. But again, if you can't get right away, the township not willing to use eminent domain and it's determined that there's no suitable design alternative, then it's that's grounds for PennDOT to deny the permit.
Okay. So, and therefore, you could be at a complete impasse in that situation where the project just can't move forward without something different occurring.
Correct.
All right, we're going to change gears a little bit. I'll refer your attention back to your review letters. Did you note a deficiency concerning the plans with respect to the minimum centerline radius required in the Saldo for the proposed radius along Sand Hill Road?
Yeah, Township Collector Street.
What exhibit are we looking at?
I'm gonna have Dave pull up exhibit A24.
Thank you.
Does that work for you?
Yep.
This exhibit?
Yep.
And then if we could zoom in.
Does the witness have a microphone?
He's speaking into it.
It's a little hard back here.
It is still hard?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that better now?
Yes, much.
Okay. All right. You see exhibit A24?
Yes.
And the area that Dave has zoomed in on, is that the area that I'm asking questions about?
That's
with respect
correct.
To the center line of Sand Hill Road and the issue that you pointed out as a deficiency?
Correct.
So is there a 300-foot minimum center line radius for that area?
For a collector road, 300 feet is the requirement from the Saldo for the horizontal curb. This curb right in here, as you approach the stop bar, appears to be much less than 300. It's not labeled on the plans, so it's tough to say exactly what it is, but it appeared to be less than 100.
Okay. So, looking at that specific area, can you explain to us what your concerns are related to a centerline radius of less than 300 feet, and you're indicating it's only around 100?
Correct.
So why is that a problem?
One of the main reasons for identifying minimum horizontal curves is for speed and to be able to travel around the curb. I think that particular concern is less of a concern here because this is an always stop controlled intersection, so speeds are lower than what the speed limit is. So at least that portion, is less of a concern. It can present problems for truck maneuverability around the curve. May present issues for vehicles along Sand Hill Road that are traveling right to left on this sheet, if you will, seeing a stop sign ahead because it's around such an abrupt curve.
So the stop sign is proposed to be after the curve portion there?
Correct. Stop sign will be next to the stop bar here, which is around the bend a little bit.
And so vehicles that are approaching the intersection, I guess, is that from the south?
It is the south.
Okay. They would be coming up. Is there anything in the way? Are there buildings or anything in the way along that roadway between the stop sign and where they would have their line of sight?
I think that was one of our comments, was to ensure that sight lines are available. So there's not necessarily structures there, but could be grading or some other vegetation.
And do you have an opinion as to what the applicant would need to do to be able to get that 300-foot center line radius?
I would expect that in order to put a 300-foot radius in there, it would probably push the road further to the south, or the curve further to the south, and may impact additional property. I believe in their HOP plans. I don't know if they're an official exhibit here.
But I think they did try to increase that radius there. I think it's now 150 is the latest plan that I have seen. So it's better than what they have here, but it's still well shy of the 300.
Let me turn your attention to the alleyway that's located at Fishburne Road. Do you recall having some comments in your review letter related to the alley?
I do. Yeah. And that was essentially related to the width of the alley. It's approximately 14 feet in width. The alley would be the fourth leg of a signalized intersection. Thought it should be widened to at least facilitate vehicles waiting to at a red light, sitting there waiting to exit the alley, and still facilitate vehicles turning onto the alley. Also, questioned the alignment of the alley and whether that could get the green light the same time as Sand Hill Road gets the green light.
Why would that be advantageous?
It's more efficient if they get the green indication at the same time. But with the skew, it may cause some confusion or some conflicts as vehicles are turning through the intersection. So one of our comments had been to consider whether the intersection may need to be split phased, which means one side gets the green and then the other side gets the green. The applicant has done some additional analysis to show that if it's required to be split phased, it would still operate acceptably, acceptable levels of service and queues.
Okay.
But I think ideally it would the alley would be aligned a little bit and squared up better to align with Sand Hill Road.
And so your primary recommendation relates to widening of the alley. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
And what would need to take place in order to widen the alley? Is there going to have to be property obtained from adjacent property owners to have that accomplished?
Correct. Likely on the north side of the alleyway, widening to that side, I think would make more sense. It gets a little bit better alignment with the intersection. That would require additional right-of-way.
At this point, has the applicant actually proposed to widen the alley, or are we just dealing with what's on this plan?
I haven't seen any proposal to widen the alley either on this plan or in the latest HOP plans.
All right. Let me change topics a little bit again. Did you also provide comments requesting that the applicant explore an increase to the buffer between the road and the shared use path along Fishburne Road?
Can I just interject in here? You keep referring to comments in a review letter, but there's multiple review letters. Are we talking about the review letter, which is Exhibit T2, or the review letter that is Exhibit T3?
I believe it's T3. And Mr. Stone, why don't I refer your attention back to Exhibit T3.
Correct, that's the right one.
And that is the one dated October 17th, 2022, for the record. But my questions are related to that particular review letter, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
And then if you can bring back up, that's perfect, thank you. So taking a look at Exhibit A24 that's up on the screen, can you indicate to us what that comment relates to concerning the buffer between the road and the shared use path along Fishburne Road?
Yeah, so they have a shared use path that's proposed along Fishburne Road that crosses the right and right out driveway and then continues on down to relocated Sand Hill Road. Kind of the dark grayish shaded area on this exhibit. There are locations specifically here where that gets real close to the edge of road, but also down here it's more of a constant width, but it's about between 3 and 4 feet between the path and the back of curb.
What's your concern about the limited distance between the path and the curb line?
It would be desirable to increase that distance as much as practical or feasible. There is some space between the path and the buildings or the parking lot that the path may be able to be increased further. You get pedestrians away from the travel way, the safer they'd be. For this type of roadway, which PennDOT has classified as a suburban neighborhood community arterial, that type of roadway, they suggest a 6-foot buffer between the curb and sidewalk. Again, back here, it varies in width because of the tapers in the road, but it does pinches down close to zero right here at that pinch point, and then out here it's between 3 and 4 feet. So if we could get closer to that 6, or even see that 6, would be better.
Okay. And that's based on safety issues. You're saying you don't want pedestrians close to vehicles?
Correct. It's a better design to get the pedestrians and bicyclists further away if you have a separate path for them.
And there have been some bicycle accommodations provided along Fishburne Road. Would you agree?
We had had a comment to provide accommodations along Fishburne. It could get confusing for them if somebody that's riding along Fishburne, not using the shared use path that's along Fishburne, is only there for 2 blocks. So somebody that's riding the road may very well stay in the road. We wanted to make sure we were giving guidance to where bicyclists should be as they're in the road. There's a channelization island here, the median. It may be confusing for bikes or cars to be on the lookout for bikes.
What were you then recommending with respect to bicycle accommodations along Fishburne Road in your review letter?
At a minimum, I think we were looking for some pavement marking, maybe
signs that indicates where they should be. If there's a possibility to possibly give a bike lane through there, I don't think there is with the shared use path being provided also, but again, we look for the applicant to come back with some recommendations there. We were just wanting to make sure they are thought about and accommodated in some kind of manner.
So then, taking a look at the right out driveway at Fishburne Road, which is right in the middle of what we're looking at currently, did you make any recommendations concerning a potential conflict that you pointed out at that location?
So this hatched area right in here, as you exit the right out driveway, it is intended to be flush with the roadway, just a striped area. Certain there may be vehicles that are looking to exit the right out driveway and drive right over that area, whether they want to drive through there and then merge over into the through lane, or maybe they want to continue straight on and turn onto Sand Hill Road. And that could possibly conflict with people along Fishburne that are either continuing straight or looking to also turn right onto Sand Hill Road. So possible conflict with people coming out of the right-out driveway, driving through this area, merging with traffic that's already on Fishburne. Ideally, that would be completely raised, but that doesn't work for truck turns out of the site. So they had proposed to stripe it out and put some hatch marking in there. I think we asked for them to consider additional alternatives, whether that be, again, raised curb, maybe the trucks can maneuver a different way, or corrugated concrete, or something that just reinforces that's not an area that's intended for cars to be driving over and using to merge onto Fishburne Road.
Okay. At this point, has the applicant modified the plan to address your comment?
I haven't seen a response to that comment yet.
And then you also had a comment related to recommending sidewalk connections from Governor Road or State Route 322 to the proposed convenience store. Do you recall that comment?
Yeah, so they do provide a pedestrian connection back here from the shared use path into the apartment building complex. They do, but there is not a provision yet for any sort of connection from the shared use path to the storefront for the Sheetz. Regardless of which direction somebody may be walking from, if they're walking to the site, they'd have to walk either through the parking lot or through grass to get to the store. But made sense to add a couple short sections of sidewalk to give more of a pedestrian path in.
And the plan does not contain that at this time, correct?
That's correct.
All right, let me have Dave pull up another exhibit. Can you pull up it? Thank you. And then there's a couple of exhibits. Thank you. All right. So, Mr. Stump, I'm going to refer your attention to what's been brought up on the screen, Exhibit A12, and specifically, it's page EXB 1.2 of that. Do you see that exhibit?
I do.
Did you perform a review of truck turning movements when you reviewed the application?
We did.
And did you note any specific issues with respect to truck turning movements at the site?
So three separate locations on this exhibit we did note. One was this right turn, turning off of Fishburne Road onto relocated Sand Hill Road that it's driving over the stop bar here. And the stop bar is pulled back pretty far from the intersection, kind of as is. I think it'd be ideal to pull that up further while still accommodating trucks, but this radius here may be able to be enlarged to accommodate that movement without, and while still even pulling that stop bar up closer.
So what would need to be done to increase that radius?
Just modify the design to open that up wider so that the trucks can make the turn without swinging out as far.
Okay.
There might be impacts to, it looks like maybe they have a sign on that corner and I don't know if there's other stormwater measures through there. But.
All right. Any other points of concern that you noted in your review?
The other two locations were right here where trucks are entering the site. And this is an older version of the exhibit where they had the stop bar for this movement back here that's now been pulled up here closer to the intersection. But so it is an always stop intersection, but a truck looking to turn into the intersection would have to essentially wait until this leg of the intersection cleared before they could make their right turn in.
And is there a way to modify or remediate that so that you wouldn't have that potential conflict?
And might be able to enlarge this radius. Again, I don't know if that, it looks like, again, there's a sign there. I don't know if that might impact the building slightly, if it might result in a smaller building or maybe shifting the building. It didn't look that far into what the impacts may be, but looked like a proposed radius could be constructed there to accommodate the delivery trucks.
Any other concerns regarding truck turning?
Just let me interject. Mr. Stump, you're talking about the intersection between the proposed driveway and the relocated Sand Hill Road there, correct?
That's correct. The relocated Sand Hill Road and the southern access to the site. The other location was just right in here where someone, or the fuel truck, after stopping off here, this may not be the fuel truck, this is the delivery truck, excuse me, where the truck, after making its delivery and as it looks to leave the site, would travel through potentially both lanes and may have a conflict with somebody that's entering the site. And I think that one's less of a concern. The truck would sit here and wait for entering traffic to clear before they make their turn. But it's just such a short distance between this inbound movement that may be made at some speed.
Right.
And that they may have to, as they're entering the site, react quickly and slow down abruptly or unexpectedly if a truck's making that maneuver as they're entering the site.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but does that depict the front of the truck would be able to make the turn correctly, but the trailer might be in the oncoming lane of travel, and therefore if someone's coming in, they may see the front of the truck is over on the correct side of the road, but having to make that turn results in the tractor being in the other side?
Correct.
Or a trailer, I should say.
Yep, so they may have to slow down or stop until the trailer completely clears. And again, and not knowing if there is a few cars in queue here while as that truck's doing that, that truck may actually be at a stop as they're waiting to exit the site as well.
All right, I'm going to change gears again.
Just for the record, sake of the record, the intersection you were talking there was a right in and right out of from the site to Fishburne Road.
Correct. It was really the movement entering the throat of the right in, right out driveway from the parking lot area of the site.
Thank you.
And let me refer your attention to exhibit T6. Thank you. You have that in front of you, Mr. Stone. And I think it's been brought up on the screen.
Yep, I do.
Well, first of all, can you just advise the board what Exhibit T6 is?
This is an excerpt from the Highway Capacity Manual, which is the framework for capacity analysis at intersections. This particular page is the delay associated with various levels of service.
And you recall me asking some questions of Mr. Creasy related to the different level of service at the intersections that were investigated for this project?
Correct.
And, you know, there were a number of them with different levels of service, A, B, C, D, and E. You recall his testimony along those lines?
Yes.
Then just referring your attention to the chart, the upper chart on Exhibit T6, can you tell us what the numbers are in the far left-hand column there?
So the level of service for a signalized intersection is based on the average delay per vehicle. And then they give an overall level of service for every vehicle that comes through the intersection, but then they also give a breakdown by approach or by individual movement. After coming northbound into an intersection and then turning left, which might have a different average delay than another movement. The numbers on the left represent the average delay per vehicle that's associated with each level of service. So level of service A at the top represents vehicles that experience an average delay of less than 10 seconds. Level of service B is between 10 and 20. Level of service C is 20 to 35. Level of service D is 35 seconds to 55 seconds of average delay. Level of service E is between 55 and 80 seconds of average delay, and then a failing level of service is when the average vehicle is experienced greater than 80 seconds of delay.
And you're using terminology of average delay, is that right?
Correct, that is average peak hour delay, which specify for average delay for a vehicle during the peak hour.
So level of service E has an average delay of between 55 seconds up to 80 seconds. Is that accurate from the chart?
Correct, yeah. It's a 25-second range of level of service E.
So you could have a significant change and still have it remain within an E level of service. Is that accurate?
That's correct, yep.
I mean, more than 20 seconds of standing at a traffic light and still have a same level of service.
That's correct.
Let me refer your attention to exhibit A29, and then page 29. So we're looking at page. That's right. So I'm going to refer your attention to exhibit A29, and then it's table 1, which relates to the level of service chart. do you agree that some of the levels of service remain at a level D or level E after the build, with, even with the improvements that are proposed?
That's correct. In several cases, the level of service without development and then with development are identical, whether it would start at D and stay at D, or start at E and stay at level of service E.
And within some of these, while the level of service remains the same, there are instances where the wait time has gotten worse. Is that correct?
That may be the case.
And even with the build and with the proposed improvements, that could be the case, right?
That's correct.
And in your opinion, is there going to be an overall increase in the total amount of traffic at the intersections involved in the traffic impact study? And I guess we're talking about peak times, right? Because that's what gets analyzed.
Yeah, and it varies a little bit by peak hour. I did take a quick look at the projected traffic volumes at 322 and Cherry, as well as 322 and Fishburne. The traffic volumes at 322 and Cherry were increasing due to development traffic, were projected to increase due to development traffic by between 4 and 5% during the peak hour. And then at 322 and Fishburne, which is more heavily impacted, is between 8 and 9%. So there's no...
And that's volume. You're talking about a volume.
That's pure numbers, not delay. Correct. That's number of vehicles going through the intersection with and without the development in the five-year projection, 2027.
Would you agree that if one or two less uses were proposed for the property, it would potentially reduce that volume increase that you're talking about?
Generally speaking, if the intensity of each individual use is kept the same and you remove one or two of them, you're going to be generating less traffic to the site, then you'll have less traffic being distributed through the intersections as well. That would generally equate to less delay at the intersection.
And what about an opinion with respect to the queue lines? Do you have an opinion as to whether with less uses proposed for the property, there could be an improvement to the queue lengths that have been listed in the table 2 that's been supplied by the applicant?
Yeah, similar to the delay decreasing, the average length of queues would generally decrease as you have less volume. All
right. Those are all the questions I have at this time. I would move to the admission of the exhibits T1 through T6.
Any objections? Any objections to the exhibits?
No.
Mr. Getz, Mr. Reber?
No, sir.
No.
Mr. Chris, Mr. Winter?
No, sir.
Thank you. They are so admitted. Mr. Strong, you're first for cross.
Thank you. Let me move this back so I can. Good evening, Mr. Stump.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Just have some questions for you. I think you've been in attendance at every night.
That's correct.
We've had hearings on this application.
Yes.
I want to talk to you about a couple different topics that you testified about. One, I just want to confirm, I think your testimony was that you served as the Dairy Township traffic engineer for approximately the past 15 years.
That's correct.
And in your role as the Dairy Township traffic engineer, are you familiar with the existing traffic conditions in the area surrounding the proposed Governor Crossing project?
I am, yes.
And if you could, just briefly describe for us the existing conditions as you understand them to be.
So there are the intersection of 322 and Fishburne has historically experienced significant delay. I think it still does at times or certain days, maybe not every day like it used to be. Used to be in the morning, long delays coming on the westbound approach as presumably people were coming towards the med center. And then in the afternoon, the opposite effect occurred where there were long delays on the eastbound approach that I personally witnessed years ago. Backed up well through Cherry as far as you can see back here, all the way from that intersection. So there have been long delays along 322. A few years ago, there was an improvement project made that installed right turn lanes in both directions of 322. I think that's helped conditions, and I think there are still times or days where it does get backed up still. But that congestion along 322 has resulted in other traffic maybe trying to avoid 322 and coming out Sand Hill, either to turn right onto Fishburn or turn left and get onto 322 that way and avoid the delays in this area. As well, I think there's no other med center traffic that just finds it easier to come out that way towards Fishburn rather than looping around. So that has caused delay at this intersection. This intersection here with Fishburn and Sand Hill is unsignalized currently. It can be difficult to turn left onto Fishburn. I think that goes just about anywhere along Fishburn at an unsignalized intersection. It can be difficult at times of day to turn left. This is no exception. But this does have a heavy volume. You can almost look at traffic counts and see how much traffic is turning right out of Hope Drive onto Cherry and then onto Sand Hill and then onto Fishburn. It's hundreds of vehicles that make that maneuver over the course of an hour. So that leads to delays, congestion, and some safety concern under the existing conditions here. I think that's why there's been discussion or thoughts over the years, I think, going back maybe 20 years of relocating Sand Hill so that it could be signalized and get more separation from the intersection with 322 and signalize it because there's so much volume coming out there and experiencing long delay at the unsignalized intersection. Thought that may help alleviate some more traffic that's pushing through on 322 because they don't want to sit at the stop sign here.
So those conditions as you've described them, and you mentioned this goes back possibly 20 years, these aren't new conditions. These are conditions that the township has been aware of, that residents in the area have been aware of and have been dealing with for a number of years.
That's correct. As long as I've been in Quad, I've been hearing about concerns there. Again, both the signalized intersection as well as the unsignalized intersection, just both being heavily traveled.
And did your firm prepare the 2020 Greater Hershey Regional Transportation Study?
We did.
And did that study evaluate the existing conditions as you've just described them and recommend relocating Sand Hill Road to generally the same location where it is proposed as part of the Governor Crossing project?
Correct. That was part of the recommendation to the study.
And did the study also recommend installing a traffic signal at the intersection of relocated Sand Hill Road and Fishburn Road?
Correct.
And did the 2020 study also propose that on Fishburn Road, there would be a northbound left turn lane for left turn movements onto Sand Hill Road?
Yes.
And are the signalized intersection at Fishburn Road and relocated Sand Hill Road and the northbound left turn lane on Fishburn Road, are both of those improvements warranted under existing conditions even without the Governor Crossing project being proposed?
That's correct. The signal is warranted at the existing unsignalized intersection. Again, right now it's too close to the intersection with 322 to signalize it there. But once relocated, it would still be, such traffic signal would still be warranted even with no development occurring. And that left turn lane onto it would also still be warranted due to the existing traffic that's out there.
In the improvements that were proposed in that 2020 study, were those improvements also proposed in the 2015 Township Comprehensive Plan?
They were.
So the Governor Crossing Project is proposing to construct improvements to remedy existing traffic conditions, and those improvements were previously recommended in the 2020 study prepared by HRG and the 2015 Township Comprehensive Plan.
That signal and the left turn lane are consistent with both those previous plans, yes.
And so if this project wasn't proposed and the township were to undertake the improvements that have been on the books going back, at least as far as the 2015 Comprehensive Plan and included in the 2020 study that HRG prepared, if the township were to undertake those improvements, in other words, relocate Sand Hill Road, install a traffic signal at the intersection of relocated Sand Hill Road and Fishburne Road, and install that northbound left turn lane on Fishburne Road for vehicles that would be turning left onto Sand Hill Road, would the general scope of those improvements be substantially similar to what is being proposed as part of the Governor Crossing Project?
Outside of the, obviously, the right-in, right-out driveway and the items of associated with that, the geometrics of the turn lane, maybe the turn lane would be 50 feet shorter or such, but it would be similar to what's out there now, that the approaches to the new signal.
And we've spent quite a bit of time tonight with your testimony talking about the highway occupancy permit process that a developer would have to go through. But wouldn't the township have to go through that same highway occupancy permit process to develop and construct those improvements that the developer would have to go through?
If it were a township-led project or a project that utilizes either township funding, combination of township and developer, or state funding. If there's federal funding involved, that there's a different process that PennDOT has to go through. It's not the HOP process. There's a different design process that you go through. But if the township were to undertake it on their own, they would be going through the same HOP process that a developer would be.
And if the township were to undertake those improvements, would the anticipated impacts from those improvements, specifically to properties that are located to the south of the intersection of relocated Sand Hill Road and Fishburne Road, would those impacts be substantially similar if it was the township constructing the improvements instead of a developer?
Yeah, from the relocated Sand Hill Road to the south, it would be comparable. Again, maybe it's a shorter turn lane or something a little bit different. Maybe it avoids a property or two. But generally speaking, it would be similar impacts to the south of relocated Sand Hill Road.
If you could pull up Township Exhibit T-4. So at the last hearing, the township introduced the plan that's been identified and now admitted into the record as Township Exhibit T-4. Is this an exhibit that was prepared by your firm?
The items in color were prepared by our firm. So the red property lines, property owners, and then the blue labels were done by us. The overall plan, I forget if that was taken from the traffic impact study or somewhere else, but that was developed by the applicant.
So the items in color were the items added by HRG to an existing improvements plan?
Correct.
And was this plan prepared at the request of the township for purposes of this hearing?
Correct. The purpose here was to make sure that the board understood what the impacts were to the property owners based on the roadway improvements and what approvals would ultimately be needed as you go through the PennDOT process.
Okay. And does this plan, Township Exhibit T-4, does it depict the improvements that were previously recommended in the 2020 study and the 2015 Township Comprehensive Plan with respect to the relocation of Sand Hill Road, the traffic signal at Sand Hill and Fishburne, and the northbound left turn lane on Fishburne?
Correct. The improvements at that intersection are consistent, or generally consistent, with what was done in the Greater Hershey Plan.
And again, the anticipated impacts to properties located to the south of the intersection of relocated Sand Hill Road and Fishburne Road. Those impacts would be substantially similar, whether it's the township doing the improvements that have been identified going as far back at least as 2015, or if it's the developer proposing to do those same improvements as part of a development plan, such as the Governor Crossing Plan.
That's correct. Again, if it was through an HOP process, they'd be, and I'll look for them to get the same approvals for the work along the limits of the line.
Okay. There was some discussion at a prior hearing on this application regarding certain properties located along Fishburne Road that have existing access restrictions that require egress from those properties to utilize the existing alley. Do you recall that discussion?
Sorry, you're talking about properties on the east side of Fishburne?
Correct.
And that they have access to the alley or would be required to use the alley? Which is
so? So the discussion at the prior hearing was that for certain of those properties, they are allowed to make a turn in movement to those properties from Fishburne, but any traffic exiting those properties is only permitted to exit to the alley and then come out to Fishburne Road via the alley. Do you recall that discussion?
Yes, I do. Yes.
In your opinion, would having the alley intersect Fishburne Road at a signalized intersection, such as the one that's proposed, make it easier for the vehicles that are currently using the alley to exit onto Fishburne Road?
Generally speaking, it is easier to exit through a signal than it is an unsignalized intersection. Obviously, at all peak times, maybe it's easier to get through at a stop sign. But when it's busier, certainly the signal provides a safer, more protected movement to enter onto Fishburne Road.
In terms of busier times or even times that aren't as busy, would having that new signalized intersection at Fishburne Road and relocated Sand Hill Road potentially make direct access to and from properties along Fishburne Road easier by creating gaps in traffic from the operation of that signal?
Yeah, so the driveway is really on both sides of Fishburne Road through here as you're either entering or exiting the driveway. When you're close to a traffic, to a signalized intersection, there are natural gaps that are created downstream of the signal. You have your yellow and all red clearance times at the intersection. All traffic comes to a stop for a minute or two, for a few seconds. That kind of lets one wave of traffic clear through along Fishburne before the next approach turns green and you may have more traffic coming from different directions. When you're downstream from the signal, there are generally more opportunities for that one direction to be clear, and then when traffic does come, it tends to be more of a platoon all at once if it's queued up with the signal and then released at one time.
And you had, talking about the alley, you had mentioned the possibility that it would have to be widened for two-way traffic. That alley currently has two-way traffic, is that correct?
It does, correct.
I think
the concern there was once it was signalized, somebody would be sitting here at a red light, unable to proceed until the light turns green. And if somebody is coming in at the same time, they would presumably be doing it on the green light. There may be a conflict where they wouldn't even be able to go until light for conflicting movement turns green and releases traffic from the alley. We don't necessarily have that at the existing condition where it's a stop sign. Somebody could sit there and wait for the person at the stop sign to go without really creating as much of an issue.
Either situation is ideal. I agree that the existing condition would be better if it were wider at the intersection.
Right. And just to be clear, and that was, I guess, my only point was I didn't want there to be an inference that the existing alley is one-way traffic only currently. It currently supports and has two-way traffic, correct?
That's correct.
Mr. McNair had asked you questions relating to the Back and Stokes property, which is out at the corner of Fishburne and Governor. And I think your response was it was unclear whether PennDOT would require any restriction because essentially they already have three lanes in front of that property on Fishburne Road. Is that correct?
Correct. There's a the right turn lane starts here, which is past that driveway. So where the driveway is, essentially through and rights are both in the same area here. The lefts are here, and then traffic going southbound on Fishburne is in the other lane. So we have three lanes that are in front of that existing driveway, and that's the condition that's proposed to remain.
And then if we move farther south along Fishburne, the next three properties that you've identified on your exhibit are the Farmer Family Trust, the Soton property, and the Catherine Nelson property. You see those three parcels?
Yep.
And am I correct that there is currently only one driveway serving all three of those parcels?
I believe that's the... I think the Catherine Nelson property has a separate driveway. It's just actually on the Blomberg property. But I think that's kind of, if I remember right, I think there's one driveway here that serves the Farmer Family Trust and the Soton property. And then I believe the Nelson property is served by a driveway that's over here.
And when we get south of, or I guess it starts in front of the Catherine Nelson property, but where the concrete meeting is proposed, clearly there's a left turn restriction for property located on the east side of Fishburne Road from the Nelson property down to where that concrete median ends, correct?
Correct.
And so the Blumberg property, I believe there's one driveway for those properties. That one would be affected by the concrete median, correct?
That's correct.
And then the last property, the Corrado property, that property does not currently have an access to or from Fishburne Road via a driveway, correct?
Correct. Yeah, so we anticipate just right-of-way acquisition being needed for that property since they don't have an existing driveway along the state road.
And, you know, we talked a lot about highway occupancy permit process, potential restrictions, all of those types of things. And is it fair to summarize or characterize that your testimony with respect to Exhibit T-4 and the PennDOT procedures in the exhibit that was introduced and admitted as Exhibit T-5, that all relates to the highway occupancy permit process, correct?
Correct.
And the master plan ordinance requirements in the zoning ordinance require that a traffic impact study be submitted with the master plan application, correct?
Correct.
And are you aware of any requirement that a highway occupancy permit must be submitted as part of a master plan application?
That is not part of the master plan submission requirement.
And I think there was a point in time during an earlier hearing where one of the supervisors, I believe it was Supervisor Nutt, had asked you a question about the highway occupancy permit process and when that typically occurs during the lifespan of a development review and approval process. And I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe your testimony was that typically occurs after you get your zoning approval and are worked through your land development plan review and approval process. Is that accurate or fair?
Yeah, it varies, but yeah, generally the PennDOT permitting process and the municipal approval process are working somewhat concurrently. It's not like you do one, then you do or vice versa. They proceed kind of independently, but along similar paths. The traffic study, of course, gets submitted to both entities. I think the reason that there is some concern or eyes on the HOP or thinking ahead to the HOP, just want to make sure that what's submitted in the master plan and the recommendation of the traffic impact study are actually implementable, whether it's right away and other items that are kind of outside of the applicant's control right now. So we want to make, you know, ensure that what's there is really going to be there, and that we don't wind up doing some alternatives analysis and some lesser or some different improvements wind up getting implemented.
Sure. And I'd like to circle back to that in a couple minutes when we talk about your October 17th review letter. But again, there is no requirement that for a master plan application that a highway occupancy permit must have been issued by PennDOT or must have been applied for. It's just not a part of the master plan application review and approval process, correct?
That's correct.
Turning our attention then to the traffic impact study, you reviewed that, obviously, in your role as the Derry Township traffic engineer, correct?
Yes, I did.
And that traffic impact study was prepared and submitted to the township in compliance with township subdivision land development ordinance requirements, correct?
Correct.
And that traffic impact study has been conditionally approved by PennDOT, correct?
Correct.
At an earlier hearing, well, and we talked about it tonight, so we can talk about Exhibit T-3, which is your review letter dated October 17, 2022. You're familiar with that letter?
Yes.
And am I correct that there were three comments in that letter relating to the traffic impact study, being comments 1, 2, and 3?
That's correct. The four, and the sub-bullets underneath four, were more related to the design and HOP process and just how it's laid out. The first three were more with respect to the recommendations and analysis in the traffic study.
So looking at the first one, and I know you provided some testimony about this at the last hearing, but that first comment relates to a five-year horizon analysis, which is what PennDOT requires, and a 10-year horizon analysis, which is what is in the township ordinance. And you provided some explanation as to why the township and PennDOT have different horizon analysis requirements. And the waiver that would be requested, is that a typical waiver request, requesting that the PennDOT horizon analysis be used in the traffic impact study?
It is typical when the township and PennDOT have different horizon years required. Typically, the municipality defers to PennDOT's standard, which is probably 5 years.
And does the township typically grant the waiver to permit the five-year horizon analysis required by PennDOT?
Yeah, in my experience, I have.
And the other two comments about signal retiming and split phasing, do you see any issues with the applicant satisfactorily addressing those two comments in the review letter?
The applicant had actually submitted additional analysis and updated the traffic impact study to address those two items. I think just within the last month we've reviewed it and we agree that those two comments have been addressed.
So the only comment in your October 17, 2022 review letter, again, relating to the traffic impact study that still remains is comment one, which is the five-year horizon analysis versus the 10-year?
Correct.
And that would be the subject of a waiver request, which in your experience has typically been granted?
Correct.
And then the comments 4, A through H, and 5, A through B that Mr. McNair was asking you questions about tonight, again, those are all planning comments relating to the highway occupancy permit process. Is that correct?
Yeah, the HOP as well as the roadway design along the township road portion.
And those would all be comments that would be addressed with PennDOT and the township during the highway occupancy permit process?
Correct.
And I think you mentioned even that, you know, you made the comment and that during the highway occupancy permit process, for example, the right turn movement from Fishburne onto relocated Sand Hill Road, that could be addressed by providing a little bit more roadway there to accommodate that truck turning movement. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think a lot of the comments that are made can be addressed, or there would be plan changes to address the comments. We haven't seen a response to those comments or updated plans reflecting changes, but I believe several of those could be updated or could be addressed through plan changes.
There was a comment made at an earlier hearing date that the township has not approved the traffic impact study that was submitted. In your experience, does the township typically take formal action to approve traffic impact studies that are submitted for projects?
No, the township, I think, approves a plan, and a traffic impact study is part of that, the supporting documents for that plan, but they don't typically take separate action on a traffic impact study.
Okay. Turn our attention to the access points that are proposed for this project. There has been discussion over the course of the hearings about the proposed access points. In your expert opinion as a township traffic engineer, do you have any concerns regarding the proposed access points?
So the right-in driveway off of 322 and the full access off Sand Hill Road, and both of those access points make sense. Again, we have comments about truck turns or something else with regard to the design of those accesses, but just purely as a the ins and outs and where they're going to occur from a traffic flow standpoint, certainly those two make sense. I think the right-in, right-out off of Fishburne Road makes sense for convenience for patrons of the facility. It does eliminate some traffic from the sheets component traversing through the parking lot to get down to the other driveway. So I think there's some benefit to that, both like I said, both convenience and just safety for those in the center. But the flip side of that is obviously, it's another access point. It is a very condensed area between the two traffic signals. There's a lot going on there. There's other driveways. I don't know that I'd say that it's not necessarily needed. I think from the township's perspective, we were okay with it if other property owners were okay with it. PennDOT was okay with it. Largely, we defer to PennDOT as it's their road. But I think the access for the site could be done with or without it.
And PennDOT has approved that right-in, right-out on the state-owned road.
In concept form, correct. Still needing the other approvals,
correct,
from abutting property owners.
In your expert opinion, then, will the proposed access points assure convenient and safe access to and from the project that will not cause undue congestion or hazards on local roads?
I'm going to object to a leading question.
I'm cross-examining the witness. I think I have some latitude.
This is cross-examination. Can you repeat the question?
Sure. Mr. Stump, in your expert opinion, will the proposed access points assure convenient and safe access to and from the project and not cause undue congestion or hazards on local roads? And I can break that into two questions if that's easier.
No, I would agree with that statement, yes.
Generally speaking, and you've had an opportunity to sit through all of the testimony and you've done the reviews going back, I think the scoping goes back to 2021.
Sounds right.
So you've been involved for some time. In your opinion, will the project primarily be capturing local traffic that is already on the roadway network rather than being a more regional traffic generator?
There's a little bit of both here. Certainly the sheets is largely traffic that's already on the road. The daycare center may very well be traffic that's already coming to the center. What used to be a dialysis center or some sort of medical building that may be more of a draw. So there's a mix there. I don't know that I have the numbers in front of me to say, it's primarily traffic that's already there, but a large percentage of the traffic is traffic that's already on around the roadways.
In your expert opinion, will the project create any adverse impacts on the adjacent roadway network or overburden the existing public roads?
No.
And Mr. Creasy with Grove Miller Engineering testified at length and over several different nights of hearing testimony Were you present for each of those hearing nights when Mr. Creasy testified?
I was, yes.
And are there any parts of Mr. Creasy's testimony that you disagree with?
No.
Those are all the questions I have for Mr. Stone.
Your timing is impeccable. We're at 7:30, so we will take a 10-minute break, so we'll be back by 7:40.